In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that is spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
But all right, y'all. All across the USC, Compton, Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer county. So if you keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MC8, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment.
Yeah, you know what it is. We back at the Gangsta Chronicles, man. You know what it do with the homie.
Big Steel. Yeah, man. It's a lot of stuff going down right now, man. About now, I think this is the most attention that the women's Final Four has ever had. In particular, man, because of the homegirl, man, Angel Reese.
They talked about this girl, man, 90 ways south, man. Said that she was low class. The one cat called her an idiot, which I didn't really appreciate. And I just noticed with them, it's always like a difference, because when the girl, when the Caitlin Clark girl was doing it, when she was out there taunting people, oh, she was a monster. She was fantastic. It was this and that. She got all kind of praise heaped on her. But when his sister went out there and did the same exact thing, they talked about her like a dog. So I guess it still is, man, a lot of division in this country, you know?
I think people just had a problem with, because she was standing right next to the girl. And, you know, the girl was like, in a, like I guess they was at the free throw line or something. I watched it. And, you know, Angel was like, you know, so, I mean, in football, that's taunting, right?
Yeah, it's taunting, man.
It's taunting. I mean, we cool with it. I mean, it's sports, right?
Yeah.
We do sports. We know kids from, shit, you can even go back to the youth level. You know what I'm saying? Kids are rivals. Nothing wrong with rivals. But, you know, some people get in their feelings about certain shit. That is done by, I guess, us as a black people. It's frowned upon, you know. But I guess if it was another sister that was standing there, would it have been a big deal if it was another sister standing there?
Probably not.
I guess that's they trying to make it a big deal because of the race issue, which they shouldn't. But, you know, that's just how people do shit, man. We've always been separated and divided. And it's always been looked upon as if we perform or we do some shit. You know, let's just face it. You know, we are gifted and talented when it comes to sports and shit like that.
Yeah, and we like to talk shit.
And we like to floss, you know. So when the other side wants to steal our shine, you know. I mean, because like I said, I seen her do it. I guess they was playing I guess South Carolina or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And I guess, I don't know, she put them out or whatever, and you seen her walking back to her bench, and she was doing it, you know. Was she following the South Carolina girls around? You know, like, hey, hey, hey.
Well, you know, she did some stuff, though, because when the girl was at the three-point line, her opponent, right, she, like, waved her off and didn't even guard her and was like, I dare you to take a shot. So she was definitely out there talking
shit.
And I'm not mad at her. See,
I ain't mad at that. See, because if she's feeling like motherfucker, I know you ain't going to make the shot. So go ahead and take it.
Yeah, and I don't got no problem with that, man. I actually don't have a problem with Caitlin Clark. I think she a hell of a basketball player. She a hell of a hooper. But at the same time, what I have a problem with is the double standard in America that still exists in America, to where when one person does it, oh, she's awesome. She's this, she's that. She get a ton of praise heaped on her. But when the sister does it, oh, she's an idiot. She low class. They may as well came out and called her a black bitch, dog.
But that's the hidden hatred of people and they, you know, and the idiot shit that they think of. But like I said, that shit has been going on for how long still?
Man, ever since I was born. I'm in my 50s, dog, and it's been going on ever since.
It's so crazy that people be so surprised about shit. You know, when it happens, I guess because the reality is people don't want to believe that the shit is still present. But, man, wake the fuck up. You feel me?
It's still pretty prevalent.
It don't matter who the fuck you vote in, who the fuck you vote out, who the fuck you make this or make that, or what rule you change or try to change or alternate or whatever. It's still going to be the double fucking standard. You get me? Mm-hmm. It's still going to be the double standard. Would I taunt a motherfucker? Shit, if I'm in that feeling.
But yeah, when you feeling yourself and you in the zone, yeah.
Nigga, we ain't never won a national championship, men or women's, in basketball. And shit, everybody had already voted us out. Like, man, we ain't finna beat this Iowa team. You get me? And to come in and spank a motherfucker 100 and something to 80 something? Man, please. I'd have been all up in the coach's face probably like, yeah, nigga, ring, ring.
Yeah.
People got to stop, you know. And then another thing, it's horrible for adults, even for the white motherfuckers, for the white people. It's horrible that you would sit up and call a college student an idiot.
Yeah, it is.
Or classless or whatever.
Oh, let me tell you who it was, because I got all these names wrote down.
It's my nigga from the president, the vice president of Barstool.
Yeah,
or one of them.
The Jose De Jesus Ortiz dude called Reese's actions classless. And Keith Olbermann called the girl an idiot. And you know,
Olbermann.
And that couldn't have been my daughter, dog. It couldn't have been my daughter.
And what's the dude? Like I said, what's the dude? The Barstool dude?
Yeah, the CEO of Barstool. What's his
name? He said she was a fucking something. Like, and then I seen the Million Dollar Game dudes come on. And they, like, I guess because, you know, they're in partnership with them.
Yeah, and that had to be, you know, Gillian Wallow. Shout out to Gillian Wallow,
so,
yeah.
They came on and was like, we don't condone, you know, what homeboy says, and he don't own our show and whatever. But I'd feel a certain kind of way to see that somebody that I was in partnership with express that, man. This is a young lady.
Well, that lets you know where they stand. See, Aide, I'm going to tell you with times like this, because this is way bigger than that basketball game, right? What this does is it gives us a reminder. Every once in a while when we get too comfortable and start thinking shit is all good and sweet, we get little reminders, right? This is one of those reminders, because you see where a person stands when stuff like this happens. Because like all the white folks I know, when the white girl was doing this stuff, oh, she's awesome. Have you seen her? The other one, oh, she has no class. And even now, man, when have you ever known the White House to invite the runner-up?
Well,
I've never seen it. It's always the winner.
You got to figure that's personal shit. You get me? Somebody in the White House feels that these women from Iowa should join in on the celebration with LSU. You know what I'm saying? Which is kind of phony.
Yeah, that's that old second place trophy shit, though,
right,
dog.
It's
you know,
second place trophy shit. Fuck it, you lost, but still, we're gonna invite you. You get to see the president, so it still makes it significant for them. You mm-hmm. get me?
But check this out. You know what? I really shout out to Angel Reese, man. This girl is taking her moment, man, and she really becoming a voice. Listen to what she said, man. About that, Louisiana State University's Angel Reese had two words for Jill Bryden after the first lady suggested both the winners and the runner-up of the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship visit the White House. A joke. Bryden attended the game Sunday at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, where Reese and her team defeated the Hawkeyes 102-85. Bryden congratulated both teams Monday during remarks to Colorado State lawmakers in Denver. Bryden said the matchup was a great game and a product of the fight for Title IX, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex at colleges, ushering generations of female athletes since 1972. Since she spoke about inviting the two teams to the White House, I know we'll have the champions come to the White House. We always do. So we hope LSU will come. But, you know, I'm going to tell Joe I think Iowa should come too, because they played such a good game. What kind of shit is that?
They got whooped. What do you mean?
They got beat. You know, they played a good game. Like, that's some bullshit.
That's a spite at LSU to me. And I'm going to just keep this in my own opinion. She was like, fuck this shit. I'm going to show them. I'm going to invite both of them. You get me? Mm-hmm. Because everybody knew what the controversy was behind that shit that was going on with the little hand thing. So to me, it was like a spite thing. Like, oh yeah, I'm going to suggest that both of them come. You get me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Angel Reese, you know why I like her? Because
I'd be like, I ain't going.
Most of the time,
I turn around and say, I ain't going. Fuck that.
Both of us got sons. You got a son that's about to go through that whole college experience, dog. They get told constantly to be quiet about shit. You're not supposed to have an opinion about it. So I'm glad that, shout out to Angel Reese, and she got some people backing her up, like Stephen A. Smith. He said, hey, Reese, I mean absolutely zero disrespect to the First Lady, but you are 1,000% correct. That is a bad suggestion. Runner-ups don't get invited to the White House. Why are we trying to change it now?
And runner-up? Fuck that. The losers.
Yeah, the losers. Ain't
why
no,
we got,
no, you're
why,
a loser.
Why are they down the runner-up? It's over.
It's over with. You lost.
You lost.
I've never known. I've been, you know, me and you both coach Pop Warner football, right? I've been on the side to where I was in the winner's seat and in the loser's seat. At the end of the game, when they're giving you your trophy, right, you get that second place trophy, you want to throw that motherfucker in the trash.
I mean, it is what it is. We lost.
Yeah, you lost.
Let's get ready for next season.
Yeah, you get ready for next season. I've never, I got a whole garage full of second place trophies, dog, that we won. You know what my son Christopher used to do when he get those? He would grab the motherfuckers and break them on the ground. Like, I don't want that. Like, we lost.
Karan would never, you know, it wasn't even about that shit. We lose in the season, Karan be like, shit, nigga, we getting ready for next season.
Ready
for next season.
You know, we got to stop, and that's the problem now in this country, man.
I think they feel like they should pacify the loser. So, you know, and then at the kid level, it's like, you know, a lot of organizations, what I was told, it's like, it's the bread, bottom line.
You know, I guess the vice president's wife, President Biden's wife, decided to invite. She said, I'm going to tell Joe I think both teams need to go, which is some bullshit.
That's, I think it's not to say it like that. You know, they have the power to do whatever. You know, she's the first lady, whatever. She's probably looking at it like, you know, it's a good suggestion to have both teams, you know, whatever. Did they invite both teams last year?
They've never done that before. The second place
teams the year before that. To me, I think it's a jab because, you know, First Lady was at the game.
Mm-hmm.
She got to witness the tension between, you know, LSU and Iowa. And let's face it, everybody wanted Iowa to win, probably. LSU was the underdog. Even though these sisters was balling and they was putting in work, it was already set up, you know what I'm saying? Mm. Iowa, the Clark's girl, you know, it was finna be.
Yeah, they want her.
It was finna be the story.
And
riding off into the sunset, oh my God, Iowa and Caitlin Clark, and oh man, she woopty whoop. So it was already set up.
John Cena shouting her out.
You know how, motherfucker, you be at the Super Bowl or something. Both teams had a champagne and the shit set up in the locker room, right?
Mm-hmm.
They both had the T-shirts ready, the hats ready, and then you get to a point where you go, oh, shit, we losing. So they clear all that shit out. It was already set up probably that they was ready for Iowa to take that game. LSU stepped up, and then as a spite call, because the young ladies was feeling, you know, the emotions of, y'all didn't give us a chance. Angel Reese was feeling like, y'all been calling me hood ever since I showed up.
Yeah, for real.
I didn't fit in. I'm not the basketball type. You know what I'm saying? She went out and proved herself against the team. And now she wants to get a little payback for all the sisters.
Yeah, she should.
For all the sisters who felt like, you know, everything's about the Clark sister, the Clark girl, the Clark girl.
Yeah, Caitlin Clark.
Everything's about the Clark girl. Y'all not even giving us a chance. So for them to go out there and whoop that ass, I want my just due. And I'm going to do, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to taunt. I'm going to do whatever. Just like our kids do when they play football. When Chris played youth ball, Karan played ball, it be games to where, nigga, we getting in the game and we going to taunt niggas. Do we get flags for it? Do we get penalties still?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you get penalties for it, but sometimes you don't. But check this out. This is what the girl had to say about it. This is what Reese had to say. All year I was critiqued for who I was. I don't fit the narrative. I don't fit the box that y'all want me to be in. I'm too hood. I'm too ghetto. Y'all told me that all year. But when other people do it and y'all don't say nothing, so this is for the girls that look like me, for those that want to speak up for what they believe in, it's unapologetically you. And that's what I did it for last night. It was bigger than me tonight. And Twitter is going to go in a rage every time, and I'm happy. I feel like I've helped grow women's basketball this year. I'm looking forward to celebrating then next season.
We all don't fit the stereotype of what we're supposed to be. You get me?
Mm-hmm.
You playing for LSU, Iowa, you playing for Georgetown, UCLA, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
You're supposed to fit a certain criteria is what they feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at how much drama my girl got, the track girl.
Oh, yeah.
You get me?
Mm-hmm.
See, when we look different and we come from our element, it's who I am.
Even with the – well, I'm going to tell you this, and I'm not going to put it out there, right? Because, obviously, you know, it's a business, right?
Right.
But they tell these kids, man, black kids, you know, and this is advice to all you young men out there that may be playing college football or basketball – Those white recruiters that come and sit on your couch, they don't understand you most of the time. They don't understand you.
No.
They're there to win games. They don't – they in a lot of places, they may not even like you. I'm going to tell you, man, I've heard stuff – you know, I've heard white coaches call kids thugs, tell NFL scouts he's a thug. So if you got tattoos on, earrings, whatever, they go say you a thug. They call you a gangbanger. Mm-hmm. They all – any stereotype you can imagine – they up there perpetuating, but it ain't a problem as long as you balling for them.
Oh, definitely.
Why you balling for him? Oh, he's a great kid, this and that. But behind your back, when the NFL comes in, oh, he's a thug. He's not a team player. He taunts people. He's this, he's that.
You don't fit that poster of what they want the image of their school, their college, their team to be. Even though you balling like a motherfucker. You get me? And like I said, like you said, I won't mention no names, but I kind of sort of similar saw that, you know what I'm saying, in a situation where kid balling like a motherfucker, undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
But this kid don't fit what they like.
Especially in that quarterback position. They want him.
The kid got tattoos, and you know he's celebrating after touchdowns, and you know, and it was cool when they didn't have another quarterback. You get me? Mm-hmm. And the kid was out there balling and winning games and beating motherfuckers that they ain't beat in 100 years. You get me?
Mm-hmm.
But then soon as somebody else comes along that fits that criteria. The poster boy of what we want our shit to be, then it's like, oh, well, son, we really don't need to use.
Oh, they want you to play another position.
Exactly. They try to switch you up. They try to change you. So it's a lot of that goes on.
Look at the kid that's coming out of Alabama now. Shout out to Bryce Young.
Right.
You know, my son played against him all in high school. He has always been an elite competitor, man.
Right.
He knows how to win games. He's going to leave it all on the line. We beat him, he's beat us. You know, my son went to St. John Bosco, right? You see all the criticism they got about him now. Now, this man that went out there and won, this young man has went out and won countless games and has proved that he can stand the punishment with the elite level of competition.
Right. He's
proven himself already that he can go play with anybody in the world.
But now
he's too short. He's not fitting
our,
the stereotype.
He's not fitting what our stereotype of a quarterback should be. I don't give a fuck that he balling like a motherfucker and he winning games and he, you get me? Heisman Trophy, all that type of shit. But that doesn't matter to the motherfucker who's 90 years old, who's sitting up in his motherfucking office with that tight ass suit on and motherfucker going, well, we should have a quarterback that's 6'6" and can stand in the pocket. And, you know, he's the all-American apple pie hot dog eating motherfucker. That's who they fucking figure who should be. And times are changing.
Yeah, because you
gotta adapt to the times and shit.
You know, but let's look at the facts, right? The kid never got not one bit of trouble.
Nope.
Not one bit of trouble, been flawless all from high school to now. Cool kid, man. I know Bryce Young and his family. Cool kid, cool right?
Kid,
cool kid, right?
Humble kid.
Cool kid, really humble, right? He's never been in no trouble, dog. He wins games, which is most important. He wins games. He's the ultimate competitor. How many times have you seen him tuck that and put his shoulders down and go get a first down?
Definitely.
He's the ultimate competitor. He has a high football IQ. So any bit of criticism that they have for him, it's almost like they couldn't wait to start unloading on this kid because he doesn't fit the narrative that he's not 6'6", blue-eyed with blonde hair flowing over his shoulders. And that's what they want. When Trevor Lawrence came out, I'm pretty sure them people up in the football, them GMs was up there ejaculating. They was probably masturbating. They was probably masturbating over his
golden boy. We have a golden boy back, you know. And it's not a Patrick Mahomes, and it's not a fucking Jalen Hurt or Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, for sure.
Or it's not a nigga quarterback, you feel me?
Because we always too short. We don't never have enough pocket presence. Oh, I question his arm strength. Or what about his intelligence? Can he read the defenses in the next level? Man, a lot of this shit is some bullshit, dog.
And when you see it and it's already been proven, it's just an obstacle that they want to set ahead because they want to devalue you.
Yeah, and when you go
to... I'm going to devalue you so I can pull you down, so I really ain't got to pay you what you should be getting.
Exactly. Now, check this out. When you go to the NFL combine, dude, and don't get me wrong, I don't have nothing against the NFL. The NFL is a great league and changes countless kids' lives every year. Definitely. There's a lot of people that don't pull their family out. They don't broke generational curses because of the NFL and NBA. So it's a blessing to be able to make it. But you do have to kind of look at it. When you go to the NFL combine, dude, it is all serious business, dude. It's no joke down there. It's cold, first of all. As soon as you get off the plane, you going to work. People poking and prodding at you, pulling you, asking you questions. So just imagine going on the interview, dog. You know, the normal job interview, you may go sit down with somebody for 30, 45 minutes, maybe an hour, depending on if you are, you know, you're going for a corporate position, and maybe you go have, you know, maybe two multiple interviews that day as you move on. But it's like the ultimate job interview. So just imagine you being a 21, 22-year-old kid, right? You going in there, man, people asking you all kind of questions. And it used to be real bad. They asked one motherfucker if his mama was a prostitute before.
Yeah, they gonna poke and pull, like you said. They going to dig and dig because they want to find something that's going to, you know, that's going to devalue you. Because if they can get you at a cheaper price, hell fucking yeah. That's what it's about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. All the time,
I
man.
I want to devalue you, shit, so. But
we still got a lot of, it's apparent, dog, we still got a lot of racism going on in America, man. But I'm going to jump over to some other stuff.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of black businesses do the same. So I want every black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have black ownership. This program gives black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and an extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
This is Gangsta Chronicles, but gangsters watch football, gangsters watch basketball. It ain't gonna be all about murderers and I mean, villains and shit every weekend.
When people feel like, you know, when you're saying Gangster Chronicles, like, and then, you know, we just trying to show people that situations from where I, like, I grew up in Compton, hood, gang bang, did all that shit. But, you know, you have to be able to show that you can advance from that and be intelligent and speak on other shit besides who got killed last night, who
exactly
sold some dope, and who raided, and what hood rat is cheating on what other nigga and whatever and so and so. So we try to show people that, you know,
we go diversify a little bit, man, because, you know, we can't talk about the same shit all the fucking time. You know what I mean?
Johnny got shot yesterday, and then next week, oh, so and so got busted, and then, you know, people get tired of, you know, of dealing with bullshit.
Hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody know the poverty situations and neighborhood situations, and we still deal with that. Some of our guests are still tied into the neighborhoods and still have to deal with the repercussions of that. But then, like you said, we got to show motherfuckers that niggas can also advance beyond that.
100%.
In the hood. You feel me?
100%. You know, I'm going to go to this thing with Gunner, man. You know, Gunner just, you know, I guess that everybody's saying he snitched, he told.
Right.
You know, you told whatever about that. But this kid, Bandman Kivo, I guess he gave Gunner $250,000 for a feature, right?
Yeah, I've been seeing that.
You know, he gave him $250,000 for a feature. And I guess after dude done went in there and, you know, spilled the beans, done ratted and all that shit, dude is like, the feature ain't worth nothing now. You know what I'm saying? It's like, why would I want that feature now? So I need my bread back. Now he's asking for $5 million. He don't want $250,000, he asked for $5 million, I guess, for his time he done wasted and everything else, which I think is a little bit absurd. He should get his money back, though. But I don't know. If I was Gunner, I probably wouldn't give him shit back.
You paid me for a verse. I gave you the verse, but you don't want to use it. So how is that, you know? Now, I could see if you gave him the money, he never did the verse. He went, got locked up, situation went down. Now you feel like, oh, no, I don't want that verse no more. Then I could see you going for your money back. You get me?
Yeah, but $5 million is kind of ridiculous, though.
But if a nigga paid and then a nigga turned you the verse in and before you released it, you went through this,
mm-hmm.
I don't see how you can get your money back because you just record labels do it all the time.
Well,
you get me?
Yeah, for real.
I'm going to go give a nigga some money for a project, and then he turn the project in, and we go, nah, we going to shelf this motherfucker. They don't turn around and go to the nigga and go, okay, give us our money back. They write that shit off.
Yeah, you can't do that. And you can't put that album out, even though they ain't using it.
Yeah.
It's not like they give it to you and say, well, you free to do it yourself.
No, that's ours. We paid you for it. We don't like the motherfucker, so what we going to do is we going to shelf the motherfucker. We just going to put it on the shelf, and it's going to stay there.
And you fuck around and get hot one day, they might fuck around and slip that motherfucker out.
They might release it, sell it to a motherfucker, license it to somebody. But, you know, that's what you know, that's the business, man.
Yeah, I got to get my, I got to start getting back more than Al, because I've never heard of Band Man Kiva.
It's a lot of these, you know.
I ain't never heard of
it. It's a lot of these new artists who, you know, it's a lot of these new artists, you know.
Well, this is what he said. He said, I paid Gunna last year for a feature. And months later, he caught a case which put my feature and everything else on hold just for him to get released and snitch. So I can't do a song with dude. I need my bread back ASAP. And if they cap, I'm going a big lawsuit. He said, I'm going big lawsuit. He said he's suing him. And you know what my thing is?
Like I just said again, he paid. So apparently he never got the verse. Because, like he said, he paid, and then he got caught up in the case and got incarcerated. So then once he got out, he's known as a snitch. So now he's like, I don't want the verse anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not going to benefit me. And because of the fact that I invested in this verse, because, you know, this is the results of what I thought was going to happen from this particular song, I need $5 million now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's just like a prediction of what I thought the sales was going to be or what I thought the song was going to do. So now that you have a bad name as a snitch, basically nobody's going to buy this record or listen to it or play it. So I'm thinking from the progress of the sales and from whatever could have been generated from the song, I'm looking at $5
million. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what, man? That's what I think. If I was Gunna, I'd tell dude to go fuck himself. Seriously, because you can't come back and ask no motherfucker for bread after the fact, just like you said.
It all depends on how you feel about it. Yeah, you could be like, dude, I give you the verse, but I ain't giving the money back. You paid for the verse, so here go the verse. If the dude turned around and go, I don't want the verse, I mean, it's a tricky situation. I mean, you would have to go to law. You would have to sue a nigga. You would have to. Because other than that, then it's going to go down the street shit. And who wants to get caught up in some street shit over a verse?
Yeah, that's real. Well, I'll tell you who was willing to get caught up in some street shit. The homie Daz, he just said he was on a homeboy show. He had Chuck Dizzle, Homegrown Radio. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them Digital Soapbox family. And he said he strong-armed Sugar to give them $2.5 million. He said he was high on mushrooms and up on that motherfucker with a screwdriver. Walked up in the office with a screwdriver, had everybody in the office hemmed up and should cut him a check for $2.5 million. So I guess Dad said, I'm going to get mine.
Depending on what life you come from. I mean, shit, everybody's had that situation to where they felt they had to, you know.
Have you ever had to run up in a label?
I've never had to run up in a label, but I've had my confrontations with labels to where I've had to go take my masters back and put them on lockdown until they gave me my bread. Yeah.
Oh, is that right? So, hey, you was on some strong arm shit. You was like, I'm playing hardball with y'all motherfuckers. I need my shit.
A motherfucker owed me some money. I turned the record in. They said the budget was gone because somebody had took the money. So I ran up to Bernie Grubman's, and before they could take the record, I walked back in there and I snatched the masters.
Let me ask you this. Did that person that got the money ever call you about it?
No. But I dealt with the label directly, and they ended up cutting me a check for the masters.
Mm-hmm. They was pretty mad about that shit, wasn't
it? I'm pretty sure. But, you know, it's what happens. Sneaky shit.
You know what? That's the worst feeling in the world. We had a similar situation happen with Glasses, right? To where we shooting a video in Atlanta, we shooting a haters video, right? And you know you got a budget there. You know how much money you got. You know what I'm saying?
You think you got a budget.
But you go there and they tell you, well, no, this was cut to this person.
Yeah.
And this was cut to that person. And the money ain't there no more. You like, what the hell?
Yeah, that was those days where when niggas would hook you up or whatever, and they just felt like they were entitled to whatever your budget was. So if a nigga hooked you up with a label or a deal and they tell you it's worth $250,000,
mm-hmm.
niggas will start calling up to the label and being like, yeah, send me 50, send me 30, send me 40. Mm-hmm. And then you go up there and be thinking you going to get money to finish your record or finish your project. And motherfuckers start telling you, oh, no, you know, we gave $20,000 to so-and-so. We gave $30,000 to so-and-so. And then it just be out of the blue like, okay, but who authorized that?
Yeah,
it's my fucking deal, right? Mm-hmm. And they look at it like, well, so-and-so walked you in the door. So-and-so is the one that got you the deal. Mm. So when they called and they said they needed $40,000 out your budget, we just cut them a check. So that was the relationships that some dudes had with,
well,
you know.
Yeah, because they were the, I guess they were the sub-label.
Yeah, yeah.
They were the sub-label. So a lot of people, especially back during the 90s, they were giving cats these pretty much these production company deals
the production deals. Yeah, they tell you can, we give you a 3-4 album production deal. Mm-hmm. You can bring in 2-3 different artists and we'll give you a budget for every artist. But then when that money hit the table, niggas be like, oh, so-and-so got 125. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna take 50 off.
Yeah,
of
and
that.
It could have been good situations though. Had people done, because I knew a whole bunch of cats that had those type of deals that really could have made a lot of money had they just really done right by the projects.
Well, a lot of niggas was from the hoods and from the streets, and like I said, a lot of niggas weren't business savvy like some dudes who you see who are successful with their labels. Some dudes looked at it as a money grab. You get me? If I can go out here and I can get me a production deal for 3 albums for 3 different groups at 3 albums apiece, that's about $1 million and some sitting on the table.
Yeah, it was
so
a lot of money.
It goes from, if we do this shit right, everybody could be the successful, the label could be here. But it started going to, I don't know what I take it as. Sometimes I take it as jealousy or whatever. You know what I'm saying? And I used to tell niggas all the time, niggas who sign you really don't want you to succeed. You get me? Especially if you're going through the subdivision label shit. A lot of niggas aren't going to let you reach that status as them. You get me? So that's when you start noticing shit. My budget ain't as much as this, or I'm not getting this, or I'm not getting that. Mm-hmm. And some niggas forget, like, this is about the label. You get me? We try to make the label successful. We want to be a Sony or a Def Jam or whatever. But some niggas can't do that.
Man, because they see that hitting licks.
They see that fucking money hit the table, and they go, you know, you should give, X is supposed to get this, Y is supposed to get this, and Z is supposed to get that. And niggas start going, I'm going to take from them. You get me?
And this is a situation, man, pretty much similar to what, you know, what the podcast people are doing and stuff like that, right? And this is what people don't understand. I have no problem with saying that you are a way bigger celebrity than me.
Right.
You have more popularity than me. What sense would it make for you to find out later on, because you go find out that, oh man, Steel went and picked up $400,000 and only gave me, you know, whoopty wham.
Yeah.
You're going to be pissed off. You're going to feel some kind of way. More than likely, our partnership go in.
Definitely.
So my thing is this. No, I'll do the right thing. We get this. Hey, here go your half, my nigga. This is what we got. Boom.
Definitely.
And you play fair by stuff. You know what I mean? So with the hopes, so we can continue making more money instead of hitting the lick right
some
now.
Some niggas don't look at it like that, which is unfortunate. Some dudes will tell you that shit. And like I say, at the end of the day, it all comes down to when that check hits the table. And you'll be talking and talking and be like, oh man, they finna give us $500,000 and I'm gonna get $250,000 and you gonna get $250,000 and woopty woop. And then next thing you know, that check hit the table and niggas start going.
And you don't got $50,000. Ain't seen nothing else from it.
Motherfucker be like, shoot, you know, well, I could really take this and do this and then tip this and blop, 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 and I can give him that and whoopty whoop.
Which ain't the smart play, man, because
it shouldn't be the smart play, because the smart play should be, if everything stays on the up and up, you'll see how successful and far this shit goes. Mm-hmm. A lot of shit falls apart when somebody start going, I think I should get more than the next.
And people start looking at it with a lick mentality instead of a business mentality. Yeah. That's why it's like, you know what? We got this in. Hey, we got this money in. Here go yours. Here go mine. And, you know, that's the way it should be, because what happens when this happens? Because it's going to happen. What happens when you on a business call and we got to go talk to the people together or something like that, and they telling you all this stuff? You looking like, that's news to me. Yeah, I didn't know that. We done made a couple $1 million and we ain't seen nothing.
You know, you go through situations like that. I've had that happen to me a few times. You get me? Dealing with a fucked up lawyer or a crooked whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you get on the phone with the label. And next thing you know, they get to telling you, well, we sent out a check for 15 and we sent out a check for 3 and we sent out a check for 7.
And they looking at you like you the one spending all this money.
And I'm looking at a motherfucker like, well, when did that check come in? Because I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. And then it's really worse when they send you a breakdown and send you a motherfucking fax. And then there's all the copies of the checks that they done paid.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
When the NBA championship is on the line, every pass, every shot, and every dribble is immediately, undeniably consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real. Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, real blood, and real tears.
Trust me, I know what it takes to bring home a championship ring.
The regular season is tough, but these games are a completely different level.
Now is the time when legacies are made.
The best team will bring home the Larry O'Brien Trophy and add their name to basketball history.
Will we see a battle between marquee franchises, or will we see a new champ be crowned?
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
These are the moments of unscripted, pure entertainment that only happen on the hardwood.
You've waited all season for this. It's time to take it to the next level. Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like my daughter telling me a new joke mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Let me ask you something. I know you're going to be politically correct because you don't like putting people on blast. Who was the most shiesty? What's the most shiesty? I can't even call them record labels, but executive you worked up under, the ghetto exec. Who was the most shiesty ghetto exec you ever worked for?
I have to be honest, the most shiesty person I've ever dealt with as far as in business was my attorney.
Your attorney, what was it?
His name was John Smith.
That was the dude that got you caught up in the shit that wound up turning all the, wound up telling on dude that was a drug dealer or whatever?
That was the situation that happened with the Chicago shit and me having to go in front of a grand jury and say that I got paid for doing a movie.
That's some crazy ass shit. Because you know the thing is, if you
want to they never, like I said, they never asked me any questions about what dude did or whatever. They just asked me, did I get paid to do a movie?
Your ass would have lied, the tax people would have been coming for your ass and everything else.
Now, my lawyer, he was in the shit with them. Which I found out later on. Mm. But he really had a lot of personal dealings with them. So if anything, he told because he knew a lot of their inner workings. I didn't know shit. I met them because I did Menace to Society. And they wanted to do a movie in Chi-Town. And just at the time, Menace was the shit. It was the popular movie. So, of course, they going to go after, you know, who they feel fits the criteria. I was known for coming to Chicago a lot. I had a lot of people that I dealt with in Chicago as far as street niggas and just, you know, concerts and shows and just being there. So,
that's crazy. So he was worse than unknown?
Yeah.
Damn, that's saying a lot because Unknown was doing some shit.
Unknown was like I say this. When you come into this business, I don't give a fuck who you are. You're going to get fucked. I don't care. You're going to get fucked. There's going to be somebody who walk you through the door who's basically going to have their hand in your pocket as they walking you through the door. Okay? So that was Unknown. He was a typical, you know, I'm a young nigga. I'm 17 years old, gangbanging and shit, writing raps about the hood. And Unknown saw it as there's my shot. You get me? So he didn't do anything though. He walked us in the door. I mean, my nigga Slip did all the beats. I wrote all the raps. Unknown walked us in the door, and I was unintelligent when it came to business. You publishing.
You was a kid.
Yeah, I was a hood nigga. I didn't know nothing about nigga. I knew crack pieces and guns and fighting at school and shit like that. I didn't know nothing about no business world and publishing and you get me? So Unknown took advantage of that. He was able to go in and get budgets and pay us what he felt we deserved as young knucklehead niggas running around the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened from there. John was a motherfucker who knew the struggles I had came through with dealing with a motherfucker like that, and he still decided to steal money. Fuck it.
So you found out he was actually taking money too?
I had to go to court for some shit, and then they broke out all the checks that he was cashing that I had no idea about. Because he had an attorney-client privilege account. So he could take checks that were for me, deposit them into his attorney-client account, and they would cash them, and he would keep the money. So when I went to court on some shit, and I'm like, oh, I don't got that much money. I didn't make that. Woomp-de-woomp. They said bullshit, because here's a copy of all the checks you received this year. And I'm looking like, nigga, it was shit like totaling $100,000. I'm like, I ain't seen that shit, nigga. I'm over here struggling as a young artist, and you up here in this office just taking advantage of young street niggas, because that's what the game was. Niggas didn't look out for each other. Niggas felt like, fuck it, if I could fuck you, I'm going to fuck you. And that's what happened.
That's some fucked up shit. So this motherfucker, how much money would you say he stole?
He probably stole over $150,000-$200,000.
That's a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
What year are we talking about? This was in the 90s, huh?
This was in the 90s, like the mid-90s, when if you wasn't a motherfucking Dr. Dre or Jay-Z or whatever, you was a struggling artist. Because we wasn't making money like niggas are today. You see niggas are streaming and doing all kind of shit. That wasn't happening back then. So if you was getting little publishing checks every 2 to 3 months, you depended on that shit. But niggas felt like, fuck that shit. Nigga don't deserve it. What's that, a check for $1,700? I'm keeping that. What's that, a check for $2,500? I'm keeping that. You get me? Why you out trying to figure out why you ain't making no money?
So he got you paying him so on top, because I'm pretty sure.
And on top of that, every time I got a check that I knew about, he would take a percentage of it.
Yeah, he'd take a percentage of it being your lawyer, because that's how most lawyers work. That's how our attorney for the show work. You know, he's a part of all our deals.
The cold
shit
about it is, at the motherfucking, when a nigga got busted stealing the checks, and I found out the checks, the next day the nigga sent me a bill saying this is why he took the money, because I owed him for all his lawyer work.
After he was taking money out of his stuff, so he wanted to
get
triple played.
After he was taking money from the gate, and after the courts found the money and showed me he was taking the money, he ran home the next day, and he conjured up a bill for all them checks and sent it to me and said, oh, this is why the money was taken.
So he had a $100,000
deal. That was the day that I stopped fucking with him and never talked to him again.
So he didn't get locked up about that shit in Chicago?
No, I don't know what happened to him with the shit in Chicago, because we separated after that. We had to.
Is this dude still in business?
No. I haven't talked to John in probably over 20 years. His son, who used to fuck with, you know, he used to be my road manager, I just started communicating with him on a low basis through Chill, because he was fuck with Chill a little bit. Chill hollers at him. So we started, we communicate. He hit me up. Hey, 8, what's up? What's up? I got no animosity, man. It's what happens, man.
Well, yeah, and plus that was on his pops. That wasn't him.
It's what happens, man. Like I said, if you ain't got fucked in this rap game, then something ain't right.
Yeah. It's a lot of motherfuckers, dog, that died broke, man. You know, I heard that, what's my guy, Sly Stone? Mm-hmm. I heard he's homeless, man. All them big-ass records they had, man, his records still generate a lot of money, man.
The problem is that, you know, ownership of shit was very scarce, you know.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they came
some
out,
niggas
dog.
Some niggas were able to be successful at it. You know, Master P, you know, Cash Money, but it was very hard for an artist to retain his masters and shit and get a proper deal from labels and shit. So even with the success of a lot of records, motherfuckers wasn't getting a just due. He was getting pennies on a dollar. You get me?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you know about this shit, you come from publishing, from writing music, whatever. Niggas is getting pennies on the fucking dollar, man. It's different today to where, you know, you could throw out a song and you could collect a 90% from it. You get me? You could throw out a record and it could stream a billion copies. You get me? It could stream a billion times. And you reaping the rewards from that nowadays to some level. Back in my days, we didn't have that. So all we relied on was pure record sales. And if a motherfucker felt like you didn't deserve, you know, I ain't finna put $1 million budget into you. I'm not finna give you no $1 million videos and send you here and have you all. You was a typical write-off for a label. You get me? Get this nigga 250 grand. He gonna go out, sell about 100,000 records, maybe 125. We gonna write that shit off. And if we want to do it again, we maybe give another nigga another shot. And if not, we tell a nigga here.
And when you think about it, back then, 125,000 albums, you was generating some pretty good money for the label.
Yeah.
You was generating that's almost close to $1 million.
Yes. So that's why they fuck around and be like, fuck it, we'll give a nigga another shot. Fuck it.
It ain't much, you know.
We gave the nigga, what, 125 grand. We spent, what, about... We gave him two videos, spent about $50,000 a piece on the videos, gave him some posters, sent him on a promo tour. So at the end of the day, what, we spent about $500,000. Okay, this nigga gonna sell about $200,000. He gonna generate almost over $1.5 million back. So we done made our $500,000 back.
And was they
keep that up?
Was they sharing? Was they sharing the publishing with you? Did you have a publishing deal with them?
I didn't have a publishing deal until I made my own publishing deal. So up until all that time, Unknown was just still in my publishing. Because like I said, I'm a young hood nigga. I don't know about that shit. What is publishing? You get me? Nigga, I wrote the rap and the record is out. Nigga, give me my check.
That's what that motherfucker, what was the attorney's name? John should have been on his ass to get that money back.
He should have, but what happened was... I just wanted to be separated from the nigga. I wanted to be no longer tied to Unknown and Big Beat. And I wanted to start dealing with the label directly. So basically, that's what they did. Because I said I wasn't going to record. Fuck it. I'm not going to record anymore. Sony, who, you know, Epic, who was like, we like the gangster rap shit. You know, it's making money. So do we want to lose MC8? He just came off a third album. Music to Drive By is doing hell of a good. He just came off a successful movie. You know, he's got the number one single, you know, in the country. So do we want to let him walk? No. Kick Unknown out and let's deal with him directly. So they split they cut the budget in half. He was collecting about $250, $260. When I was going through him. When they kicked him out, they cut my budget in half.
That's crazy. So you really wind up losing money, kind of?
I did. Because they figured that I only needed about $160,000, $175,000 when they was kicking up $250,000, $260,000. But when I took over the deal, they cut the budget in half.
Now, do you think that if you would have came, because you could have been a free agent at that time, right? You could have went somewhere else, right?
Right.
Did you think about telling them to go fuck themselves and go somewhere else?
I already knew that, like I said, I had what, maybe when I split with Unknown, I knew I had two albums left with Sony. I was ready to leave. I didn't want to be there because they didn't know how to deal with rap. Epic had never been successful with hip hop. Never. They were a pop label. Pearl Jam, Michael Jackson, Sade.
Yeah, for sure. Me.
They didn't know shit about rap. So I was ready to leave. Menace was successful. I started getting little deals, you know, to produce here and there, me and Slip. So I would meet niggas. So I met my nigga Craig Kalman, and he offered me one of those production deals. And so I said,
so you would have been able to go on and sign. That's what Lil Bird and Hawk and all
that. I had a three basically artist production deal, and each artist got three albums. So I had nine albums on the table, going through Big Beat Atlantic, and on my last record, Ron Sweeney, who was running Epic at the time, offered me a new contract. But I didn't want to take it because I knew they was full of shit. Epic didn't know what to do with me. So I turned it down. I went back to Big Beat waiting to get started because I still had one more album with Epic. So when I turned in the last album, they came back with like $1.2 million for me to re-sign. And I said, okay, fuck it. Even though the niggas don't know how to do no shit.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
I still have $1.2 million in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to Big Beat and was like, since our deal don't start for another year, I want out the deal. Because they wouldn't let me out. They wouldn't let me out unless I paid them $500,000.
That was Craig Kalman?
Yep.
Craig Kalman, just a scandalous motherfucker.
He would not let me out there. I hadn't taken a dollar from Atlantic. From none of the albums, from none of the deals, none of that. Mm. And I tried to get out the deal, and they wanted me to kick up $500,000 to get out the deal.
That's crazy as a motherfucker. I think the homie Fiend was dealing. I think that's who he was dealing with, man.
So I ended up turning the fucking Epic money down to keep the fucking production deal with Atlantic, and come to find out, they didn't even want to deal with us no more, because that's when they started the ban on gangster rap music. So they did not want to distribute anything related to street shit.
So that's fucked up.
So I basically got fucked. And so after that, the motherfuckers come back to me and told me, oh, I could go shop for a new deal if I wanted to. After they made me turn down the 1.2.
And the 1.2 ain't on the table no more.
It's gone. It was gone. And so I ended up basically had to go after Craig and got ready to sue them because they wouldn't honor the production deal.
Yeah, not to get all in your business, but you got to resolve with them?
We settled for a little change. And then I was able to walk. That was it. So the 9 album deal was off the table. It was out the door. And it was like, oh, well, you can go wherever you want to. And I'm like, huh? So I had to basically fight them tooth and nail myself with no lawyer, none of that. And I had to call them and basically talk shit until they decided to cut me a check and let me go.
That's fucked up, man. So you fucked around and missed out on a $1.2 billion deal. See, you better than me, man. That'd have been one of those times where I've probably been, I was a young nigga back then too, I'd have been walking up in that office. I know you thought about it, didn't you? I know you had to think about that.
I was like, you know, at the time, I was just trying to figure out, you know, I was just trying to figure out what was going on at this point. Like I said, it was like at the, you know, the career had slowed down, you know, trying to figure out what the fuck was the next move. Didn't want to go back to street shit, you know. So at the time, I just started getting into football. Fuck it. You know, learning, coaching, watching motherfuckers, going to games, you know, just doing normal shit. I started trying to get into doing normal shit. And then once I had my son, you know, I was like, fuck the music shit, really.
So you got disenfranchised. I think that happened to all of us. I was working for a publishing company. I was an A&R for Minder Music. And one of the things that they were trying to do, they were really trying to empower their son. Which I'm not mad at, it's they kids, you know what I mean? And he was a cool kid. They was actually pretty cool people. Like, when I think back on it, when you young, you kind of think a little different.
Right.
But they was actually pretty decent people, man, now that I think about it. They paid me everything I was, but I think I got disenfranchised with the music business because I realized as an A&R, I had a pen with no ink.
Right.
I ran across too much talent that I wanted to mess with, and I was always getting told no at every turn. The one kid they let me sign, we wound up putting out a gold, actually a platinum record. We wound up doing an ice cream paint job record for Duro, and that went platinum. But we had so many opportunities, people we could have signed, man. They passed on TDE. That's the one biggest regret I got. I was talking to my boy Top at the time, right? Top wanted to do a publishing deal to put some money in them kids' pockets, right? He said, hey, if we can go up here and get X amount of dollars, whoop-de-whoop, we would do a thing. I go to them, they looking at me like I'm 15 karat crazy, man. They look at me like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. No, we don't want to do this. Because they were really big on analytics.
Right.
You know, he was big on analytics. Well, they don't have nothing going on. You know, this
they
and that.
They got none of that analytics shit. That shit that they, the algorithms and analytics. Yeah. And they want all that shit to be happening.
And this was right before, I think they was about to release Section 80, right? That was Kendrick's first album, right? They had already had J-Rock. J-Rock was over at Warner Brothers. They had Kendrick. And, you know, TDE was still fairly new at the time, but they was bubbling though, right? And I believed in them so much because I was around topping them every day. You punching all of them. I said, man, these dudes going to be the hottest dudes, not just the city, probably the country, because I saw how they were developing. They really got a grasp on the internet. That was when the internet first started. It was like kind of start popping. And I saw them. I said, you know what? And I knew, even back then, I knew the K-Dot was going to be a star. I said, this little dude is dangerous. You know what I mean? He's going to be one of the greatest. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. J-Rock was hard. Schoolboy Q, they just had a roster full of talent.
Yeah.
And I knew, and at that time, for what they had, Top wasn't asking for a whole bunch of money. It wasn't nothing ridiculous. He just wanted one of them deals, okay, let me get some money for these dudes' pockets, right? Had we done that deal, man, that deal would have wound up paying off 20-fold, dog. 20-fold. You talk about giving the motherfucker $500,000 that's going to be later on probably worth closer to $1 billion?
Yeah.
Come on, man. They turned that situation down. And I was more mad about that than anything else because I brought them. I brought Fingers in there, producer Fingers. He was my homeboy. He was doing a lot of the Chicano rap stuff. You know, he did Lean Like a Cholo, which was turned out to be a platinum record. So he did Lil Rob Summer Night. So he had all these records that he did. It just made sense that had they listened to me, dog, I would have probably wound up being in that, you know, I used to always look at that Source Power 30 shit. I would have probably wound up being one of the most powerful dudes in the music business, but instead they were saying no to everything.
Yeah, that's how, you know, when they got them old traditions, man, they don't know, you know, how to discover shit. They just like to sit back and watch the old wheel turn and don't want to invest in the new vision. And that's where a lot of niggas get, you know, fall, you know, behind because you be having all these ideas and all this shit that you know. I see the vision. A lot of motherfuckers don't see your vision. And that's what happens a lot with this business. You know, you got to really get motherfuckers who believe in your talent or whatever it is you're trying to do. Because like I said, motherfuckers will take advantage of you and they either want to fuck you and steal from you or they don't believe in you. So a lot of niggas had to go out and just start doing shit on their own to prove to motherfuckers.
Yeah, I got tired, dog. You know how you said you went to the regular life?
Mm-hmm.
So you figure, man, I had a job, man. And, like I said, they wasn't bad people, though. They just didn't let me do my job. Had they let me do my job, because one thing I will tell you, the lady, the wife, because they were divorced. It was funny they were divorced, but they still worked together and did everything together, right? So the lady was cool, man. She pretty much gave me her credit card when we opened up the office in L.A. Because when they came to me with the plan, they were based in England. They were a U.K.-based publishing company, right? So their whole plan was to expand to the United States. So we went and got a fresh, they got a dope office, man, on Sunset Boulevard. And, you know, the Guitar Center was down the street. She pretty much gave me a card and said, go get what you need for the studio. Well, what's my budget? You know what I mean? Like, if I'm thinking, you know, $5,000-$10,000, we get a little setup, pre-production setup.
Yeah.
She like, no, go spend this stuff. They spent $75,000 without batting an eye. That was when the Pro Tools HD just came out. We had live skin there, dog. We had everything, right? And she got it, man. She was with it. She was with the bullshit. You know what I mean? She got it, man. But her husband was just always knowing everything. But he was a smart dude, and I learned a lot from him. You feel what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was one of them dudes. And I asked him one day, man, do you regret not letting me sign people? He said, well, I didn't have them before and I ain't got them now, so no.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I didn't have them before, I don't have them now, so I don't regret anything.
So he wasn't tripping, but he wound up coming up because I believe they wound up selling a portion of their catalog, dog. I think it might have been Sony or somebody like that. So they wound up and they gave him a job too on top of that. So he wound up negotiating a good thing, man. But they was good people, though, man. And I think at the time I was pissed off at them because they wouldn't let me do certain things, you know?
Right.
But looking back on it now, I would have probably handled things way more different.
Yeah, some people just don't want to renege that power. You get some people you get to trust you, and then some people just don't want to renege. So it is what it is when it comes to this business. Like I said, if you've been in here and you've dealt with this music industry or whatever it's been, you get fucked out of a lot of shit.
It had me depressed, though.
A lot of opportunities. It'll have you depressed. It'll have you not wanting to do this shit no more. And like I said, I just had to sit back and just watch the transition. You know, music was turning. It was going in a different direction. So I didn't even want to be caught up in it. I stayed out the studio and just tried to live normal for a minute.
I really went through a depression, Nate. I went through because you think about it. In a fit of me being over-emotional about some shit, I wound up getting fired, and they should have fired me because I was being mad, disrespectful, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I lost, you know, a job. I was making about $175 every year, you know what I mean? Instead of taking that opportunity and going to go possibly get another job, because when I was working for them, I had a lot of people, because you know I had this success with the ice cream paint job record. So I had different companies like Bug Music and different people were like, you know, you come over, you know, come over here, and I could have probably went over to Warner Brothers at the time. And I probably should have just played that hand better, man, and stayed with them and went over, because one thing I realized, once you step out the industry, those jobs are no longer available to you.
Hell no.
Once you out the thing, I should have never stepped off the mountaintop. You know what I mean? I should have stayed in the mountain and just, you know, really ingratiated myself to them and said, hey, guys, you know, I appreciate the opportunity, but I'm going to go over here and do this now, you know?
Exactly.
And stayed in good graces with them, man, instead of leaving, slamming the door, talking all kind of shit, you know? But that's young shit, you know what I mean? That's right. Just young nigga shit, dog. But I really went through a bad depression, dog, because you don't realize, dog, you think you balling until you stop. That money stop coming in. And you start, you know what I'm saying, kind of falling off, man. Mm-hmm. And I went through a really bad depression, dog. I was fucked up back then, like really fucked up. And thank God I got it together. Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find a purple mic on the front of your screen, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles podcast are Norman Steele, James McDonald, and Aaron MCA Tyler. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt, and our audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of iHeartMedia Network and the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
In the pressure cooker of the NBA playoffs, there's no room to fake it.
Every pass, shot, and dribble is immediately consequential.
The playoffs are the time for the real.
Real stakes, real emotions, real sweat, blood, and tears, real legacies.
Which teams will rise from the chaos? Which teams will conquer?
Which team is going to make this year their year?
You already know when and where to find these moments of unscripted, pure entertainment.
Don't miss 1 minute of the action. Tune into the NBA playoffs on ESPN and ABC.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us, wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk? Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar 20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.